Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Jetstream podcast. Jonas Schwartz, Willie Colon, like always. Ralph Vacchiano will join us to start the show. In our On the Beat segment, you will notice something slightly different this week. We're on Facebook Live for the whole show. Yeah. Fantastic. We will answer all your questions later in the show, so please make sure to ask in the comment section, or if you go on Twitter, you can send them to me or Willie, and we will answer all of them, which we appreciate. And we are happy to have this extravaganza off a big 34-21 Jets statement win over the Bills on Thursday night, which feels like years ago to us.
Right.
We were all here. You were out at the game, Ralph. Before we get into it, let me just remind you, you can listen to the Jets stream every week by subscribing to the show in your iPhone podcast app or wherever you listen to your podcast. Just search for the Jets stream, find our logo, hit subscribe. Please make sure to rate and review the show. Now, if you haven't seen this on the Facebook Live, if you don't rate it the right way,
I will come for you. I'm coming to your house.
And even worse, if you thumbs down it, my mom comes to your house. And that's much more intimidating than Willie, trust me. So let's get into it. You know, I had predicted the Jets were going to beat I picked the Bills 24-20.
It worked.
My reverse psychology.
It did work. That's good what job. We do. Yeah. We have reverse
Willie
psychology.
Picked 21-17, but let me get both your takes. You were here with me that night. You were at the game.
I was at the game, yeah.
I'm trying to remember because the last I saw it was 2 in the morning on Thursday. How shocked were you? Were you shocked by what happened with that Jets effort?
No, I wasn't shocked by how they played. I think for me, and I think Coach Westy talked about it when we kind of all sitting around talking, the Jets have showed you they're capable of playing like that. We only get disappointed when they don't play like that. When you understand that they have a defensive line that can get after the quarterback the way they got after Tyrod Taylor, when you look at a secondary that they can tackle really well, when they play fundamentally sound football and they scheme it up right and they just, you know, pretty much tie it back and go, they can be a really good outfit, and they was able to show that on Thursday. It's when you look at the Miami Patriots and the Falcons game, you know their the expectations you have and they don't get it done, that's when you're frustrated as a Jets fan. But right now, I'm just happy they finally got to the quarterback. Mo had a sack. Leonard had a sack. Even Steve McClendon got in for one. So it was good to see that D-line get after the quarterback and kind of get on the stat sheet.
What was your view from the building?
I feel exactly the same way, that this was kind of a game that had been bubbling under the surface.
Yeah.
Because when you look at it, and I know this is crazy to say, and it's football and you really can't go back and look at it this way, but they could have blown out the Patriots and they could have blown out the Dolphins. Falcons maybe not in that bad weather, but the way the Jets were playing, what got those games close and ended up making them lose were big mistakes at the wrong times. So you had this feeling that if they could ever have a game where they didn't make those mistakes and things got together like on the defensive line, they could do that, especially to an opponent that wasn't necessarily the Patriots or the Falcons.
But even going into that fourth quarter, as well as they were playing, you were still like, oh, man.
Here comes the fourth quarter.
I looked at Jonas, you're starting to rub off on me. I'm getting anxious. I just feel like everything's going right, and I'm just waiting for the disappointment to happen. And even towards the end, you're like, please. I mean, right down to the 5 minutes left in the fourth, you still was like, how are they about to slip this away? And they were able to score enough where the game may be out of control. But
see, I felt good. But then when the onside kick got recovered by Buffalo,
I was just like,
But can I tell you what I thought was a really good statement by this Jets team? Because, you know, in my mind, this team had been playing very, very well. And, yes, even though they were losing games closely, there was a thought that they might be playing a little bit above their head in terms of Josh McCown or just everybody. And you wondered if after all of those close losses and the fourth quarters going the way they did, if this team on a tight turnaround, banged up secondary, right? Mo Wilkerson has been, you know, not practicing. You wondered if this is where it came crashing down going into that game. And boy, did they show you, it's not that they were playing above. This is what they are, a team that can play at this level for a sustained stretch. And Willie, I thought, you know, from a Jets perspective, that was a great thing to see.
I think, you know, schematically, you talk about how much Todd Bowles have to week after week have to get this team ready. Not only play, but to schematically get in there and get this team to execute. You're talking about the Jets went to a five-man line, contain Tyrod Taylor, get to him, it pretty much suppress him the whole day. From the offensive side, you know, you leave Atlanta where you felt like you should have ran the ball really well. You didn't really run the ball well. Forte had his little comment after the game. Bilal Powell didn't have a really breakout game. To go into Thursday night off a short week and commit to the run and tell this offensive line, like, hey, you want it, we're going to give it to you, but you got to execute. Then for that offensive line to say, hey, you know what, they're giving us the ball. Let's get it done. Because it's hard for an offensive coordinator to listen to your guys and say, hey, you know, we want to run the ball, but you're down two touchdowns, and it's late in the fourth. And get so to come out on Thursday night and to really dial it up and really stay pretty much commit to the run and execute it, I think it tells a lot about Todd Bowles to get that team to recover on prime time and believe in the scheme at hand.
I can't be more impressed with Todd Bowles. I mean, first of all, you forget the schemes for a second and you just look at this team believing in itself, a team that everybody thought would win 1, 2, 3 games. They never thought that, and they kept fighting the entire way. And then after losing 3 in a row, you're right, they could have spiraled after that. Right. They could have said, well, this is who we are, but they didn't. They came out with a great effort. And I think the coaches overall, not only are getting them to believe, but you talked about the schemes on offense. You see different coverages on defense, especially when Mo Claiborne went down a couple of games ago. You're seeing more blitzes here and there. They're trusting these guys to do things, and you know more about this than me. I think if a coach says to you, you know what, no matter what everybody thinks of you, I trust you guys to get this done. Let's try a few different things. It doesn't have to be just vanilla. That gets their confidence building.
I mean, you talk about week 1 and 2. I was hard on DeMario and Darren Lee. I know Jonas, we both were critical of them. Both of these guys have bounced back in such a big way.
I mean,
DeMario, having played with him, I thought, you know, going into the season, I was like, man, losing David Harris, that's going to be tough for this Jets team to overcome. DeMario has stepped in and done an amazing job thus far. I mean, he's playing at a Pro Bowl level. I mean, you can honestly make a vote. He can be in the mix. Darren Lee, week after week, you slowly see him to mature. They're asking him to cover, and he's doing a great job covering. There's sometimes he gets burnt, but to be in the mix, I mean, you go back to New England, he's covering Gronk. He had Hooper in Atlanta, he had a big day with. So there's times where you see Darren Lee like, you know what, maybe, you know, there's something to this kid that we just only Todd Bowles saw and we didn't see. Now we're starting to see more.
Look at the gap integrity and discipline. Look at the difference between this last game against Buffalo as compared to the first game against Buffalo. It's night and day.
Oh, no question about it. What they did to LeSean McCoy in this game.
Yeah.
He had no room to run anywhere. I think 24 total yards, something like that, and one of them was like a 10-yard run. They didn't let him get out into space to catch a lot of passes out of the backfield either. They did. It's like they looked at that film and said, here are all our issues, and they just went ahead and fixed them.
It's not easy either.
No, and you brought up a good point about coaching staff adjusting, right? So Forte has the comment. When you say the Jets dedicated themselves to the run, I mean, they did it with playing Eric Tomlinson more in two tight end sets, Dakota Dozier as an extra blocker. I mean, I would think, and you dealt with this, I'm sure, coaches who their egos get in the way and they won't make adjustments, especially off a player saying something post-game. But I give credit to Bowles and Morton for both saying, hey, maybe there's something here that we have to adjust to, and then they did it in a big way.
Not even that. I mean, you talk about all year, I've never seen Brian Wentz's pull. Second play of the game, he's pulling. Then Cart pull. Then you see Dakota Dozier line up at tight end. Thomason goes to the fullback. So they went to this and said, hey, we're gonna waste all our bullets. We need this win. I honestly felt this was a must-win game for the Jets, and they did it. They came out and said, hey, whatever we got, we're dressing it, and we're going to play them. And all these guys believed in the scheme. It was good to see they finally have range in the playbook as far as pulling the winners. And really, you know, what I was, you know, from interior, I think it's hard to understand if you didn't play the game. From an interior aspect, it's hard to get guys to do things they haven't been able to do all season. But to get out there on Thursday night on a short week and really throw in a couple plays and say, hey, this is going to be our brother. You have to make it work. And then to execute it, you got to give credit to that offensive line, man. They answered the bell.
Well, give me the sense in the locker room after the game. And you've been in these locker rooms. How jubilant was it?
They were pretty happy. I mean, they weren't happy like dancing on the field happy.
Sure. Which we'll get to, yes.
Right, which is a great statement about how much fun they're having. But, you know, they were all so positive and confident about this team. And, you know, again, they're under 500. So I think they all understand
what it is.
Exactly. Yeah. It's reality. Yeah. But they know what they can be. And they are confident in themselves. They're confident in the coaches. And it's such a night and day difference from a year ago. And I know the losing last year had a lot to do with it. You had a lot of veterans who expected a big Super Bowl playoff run and didn't get it, and that's hard for veterans to come to grips with. This is just a young team that sees the future. Whether they get there or not this year, who knows, but they're excited about what this team is building.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, and we'll get to Jeremy Curley and that news, but there's too much good news that I want to finish up with before we get to Jeremy Curley. The whole Jets defense dancing meme is taking off.
It's taking over the country.
Social media.
I think Steve Harvey had it on his show, too.
It's viral. Yeah. I mean, my goodness. What were your thoughts as you see this thing blow up this way?
I tell you what, my rookie year, we went down when I was at Pittsburgh. This was when Willie Parker and we had a, you know, the line we had, they had just won the Super Bowl in Detroit against Seattle. And this is when Jacksonville was Jacksonville. I mean, you talk about John Henderson, Marcus Stroud, Rashawn Mathis. This, I mean, they were ranked pretty much two or three right behind the Pittsburgh Steelers in defense. And it was 90 degrees weather. And Jacksonville came out in all black, and we had to wear white. And I can remember, you know, we kick off the ball. You know, they pin us back. Pittsburgh's offense now has their back to the Jacksonville, right? And it was a Monday night game. It's like 85 degrees, humid. And I can remember looking at the Jacksonville defense, and they were dancing, and they were partying. They all had dreads like me, and it was like the whole secondary had dreads. And they looked like the more they danced, the bigger they got. But I tell you what, it was that enthusiasm, was that energy that it carried that defense. And sometimes when you see guys or teams, players dancing on the, you know, on the field, it can be a little goofy. But when you see a whole unit, and you, as an offensive player, you turn around and you're in a dogfight and you see the other side dancing, that's intimidating. You're like, yeah, man, they're enjoying this punishment, this battle more than I. Maybe we got to step our energy up. And then when you see guys make plays and they're getting sacks and then you see the energy and they keep dancing, that's a momentum wave. That's enthusiasm. That's energy. So I've been on both sides of it. From being an offense where you're doing so well, you're dancing. Then I've been on the other side where you're not playing so well, and you just want the defenses, somebody get a hurt on that side so you get a break, and they just like they get bigger because of the energy. And that was good to see because that's infectious.
Right.
And when the team sees that, when guys on the sideline, you know, you have some guys who are maybe not talkers like a James Carpenter or some guys. When they see that, now their energy picks up, and that carries you through a game. So it was good to see that defense kind of.
By the way, Jordan Jenkins not only a talker, not a dancer either, as he was the one who was not. Did you get a sense in the building that was going to be something? Did it catch your eye while you were doing your work?
It did.
Game?
I have to admit my, old man in the press box response to that at first was.
What's this?
There's a lot of time left. If they're going to dance, they better hold on to this lead.
Right.
Otherwise, that's not going to go over well. But, you know, I liked it. I enjoyed it. The fans loved it. It's just a sign that I think that everybody's having fun. And that's not something that the Jets have done a lot of in recent years. And, winning obviously makes a difference.
It's the ultimate deodorant.
No question about it. But the fact that you've got this young team that was just beaten down all summer long now can finally show, you know, you every time they lose three in a row, they're countered out again. They respond like that. I thought it was natural, obviously not planned.
Right.
Just this exuberance, right, this energy like you talked about that they have somehow managed to maintain in a year that we all thought would be just a death march right to the end.
And that comes from Todd Bowles. Because when your coach doesn't panic, your team doesn't panic.
That's a good point. Yeah.
You're there when the pressers and all those things are on. Yeah, I mean, after every game, we rush to the studio and we're listening to the questions that are asked. He's have to respond to, and there's never a panic. He goes, listen, I didn't see it. I got to watch the tape. Oh, I saw the effort, but I got to watch the tape. Right. There's never a panic. And as a head coach.
Or an excuse.
Or an excuse. That's true, too. As a coach, when you stand in front of your guys and you feel anxiety or you feel frustrated, that goes right into your team, and then that creates separation. He never gives you that. That's why the team plays the way they play.
If there's one guy whose dancing needs work, who are you going with?
Whose
dancing bothered you the most, Willie?
You know, it was surprising. I
enjoyed the different style. I would actually like to see them try and do that, you know, to Def Leppard, which you know is my first thought. I don't think enough Def Leppards incorporated.
Mo got moves. Mo didn't give me enough wiggle, but everybody else I was happy with, man.
Well, Mo's got to save that wiggle.
Yeah, he got a little wiggle to him.
It was Darren Lee had like a little bit of a rumble.
Jamal Adams was my favorite. Jamal Adams, he was the best one. I loved it.
Mo Wilkerson, let him start practicing.
Yeah, I guess,
the shake going.
Exactly.
Is all I'm going to say. But it was a lot of fun for everybody to watch. And you know what? It's fun. Let's be honest. The last Jets thing that probably went viral, and I'm not trying to make this a downer, was probably the butt fumble. How much better is this?
Oh, wow.
How much nicer is this?
No, very good point. That's been a stigmatism on the Jets. When you hear Jets, I've been in bars where you say, oh, you play for the Jets. Oh, were you there for the butt fumble? I'm like, no. And why do you only remember that? There's so many things we've done.
You know what? Also, it's a significant moment, I think, for the fans, too, because for the Jet fans that I know, they obviously in the offseason and the summer did not believe that they would get anything out of this team. And even as they started to win a little bit, were kind of reluctant to get on board. I think that was the moment for a lot of people where they said, you know what, I really like this team. I really like these young players.
No question. Let's move on real quick. Jeremy Curley, the four-game PED use suspension. How much does this hurt this team?
I would feel like it would hurt this team from a standpoint if Adarius Stewart wasn't playing good, if Chad Hansen, who I think has, you know, I really like him, they have enough where they can overcome. I think it's disappointing from the Jets standpoint because, you know, he's Mr. Reliable. You know, he gives you what you want. He's a big factor on offense because when Josh can't really get the ball down the field, his intermediate route running gives them a chance to kind of move the chains. So he hurts them on a production standpoint. And punt returner. So you just want to see him just kind of get washed away and then move on. Because like we just talked about for like 25 minutes, there's so much good to talk about with the Jets. You don't want to have this one thing kind of be that blotch when things are kind of going the right way.
Well, let me get back to the good stuff then, right? You know, all points well taken on Curley, and it's a shame. But let's talk a little bit about Jets playoff scenarios.
Ooh, crazy, isn't it?
I mean, think about that. And I understand the record still. Listen, it's not like they're three games over 500, but right. Still they are very much in the thick of things here. You think that they have real playoff shot here?
I do. It's maybe a bit of a long shot. I mean, realistically, they're 4-5 now,
yes.
Right? They have to go at least 5-2, you would think, to get that ninth win to really get them in the conversation.
Right, 2-3 in the division.
Yeah, they have a tough schedule coming up.
Tough.
But some of those games suddenly look a little less tough.
Denver.
Denver is collapsing.
Right.
Tampa with Ryan Fitzpatrick now.
Oh, man.
Next game. Maybe no Mike Evans in that game. Two games that you would have thought probably not winnable, now possibility. Now, you know, they also have the Chiefs. They have New Orleans.
Carolina.
New Orleans in New Orleans.
Exactly.
Right.
So, you know, it's not going to be easy. Chances are they'll lose a couple of those games along the way, but you might be looking at a scenario where they're going to head into that last game at New England.
All or nothing.
With a shot.
Yeah. Right.
That's not
on New Year's Eve, New Year's Eve day.
I don't know that they win that, but it's not crazy to play that scenario out.
And I like to be able to talk about it. And my problem, like we kind of, you know, I don't want to be redundant, is they show you they can go out and play good teams. They know what they have. You see the weaponry. You see what they can do on defense. As a Jets fan, you're frustrated because they can beat Carolina. But they can't, you know, you don't want to see them struggle and lose to Carolina. A lot of teams they're about to face, if they come out and start fast like they've been able to do, they dominate on defense, especially up front, they can really blow a lot of teams out early. It doesn't have to be a fourth quarter, you know, they need a big play. They can really stick it to a lot of teams.
You want to avoid the fourth quarter?
Yes, I'm just like, just get up and
Well, I have rubbed off on you. Boy, oh boy.
So that, I just feel like they can, if they really believe and continue to believe, they can shock the world. They just have to really embrace it.
I mean, it's a great storyline and a credit to everybody in there. And I think, you know.
But the question is, too, if they don't make the playoffs and their record is respectable, you have to sign Todd Bowles right after the season.
Yeah.
Well, you
got to give him a contract.
You would think. I mean, yeah. You would have to think things would have to bottom out. Totally bottom out.
Right.
In a Ben McAdoo-like way.
True.
For it to reverse.
Well, how good was it to throw that rock?
I mean, but think about it. I mean, because obviously all things are pointing in a different direction, you know, thanks to the fact that he got the two safeties
yes.
who set the tone defensively and then Josh McCown who set it for them. But, I mean, I think it's an interesting point, and I think Ralph – before we go full into the playoff talk, the Tampa game is an interesting test for a couple of reasons.
Yep.
This would be a natural letdown spot. You've had a lot of time to bask in a big win against Buffalo. Now Jameis Winston's not playing, although they might want to show fits they don't miss him. But this would be the exact kind of spot where not just the Jets, but any team might get a little full of themselves, although the Jets would not deserve to do that. Take care of this game, and then we really talk about it. Then you go into your bye, and then we'll really talk about your playoff
chance. Oh, right. This is something that Todd Bowles has to be on guard against and probably has all season long. There have been a lot of places where the Jets seem like they got a little full of themselves, and I don't know that we've seen that letdown yet. I know they've had collapses in the fourth quarter, but no place where I thought, well, they just felt like we were going to steamroll
yeah.
these guys. They seem to play hard in all of these games.
This going back to the offensive side, going into Sunday's game against Tampa, it's going to be warm. This team has to understand the weather is going to be an issue. They're going to have to set the tone physically, right? They're going to have to go out and say, hey, we're not worried about the weather. We're worried about the W. And they have to take it to this Tampa team because this Tampa team has no expectations.
Right.
They understand. They know the Jets are riding high. They're just going to go out there and let it fly. You don't want to see the Jets play tight, but you want to see them play physical. And that will be the key factor for it to beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Jets have only played to the level of competition, played down once this year, and that was Cleveland, which
yep.
is a game they were fortunate to win. But it was
I don't even think they played down in Miami.
That's fair.
Yeah,
okay.
So that's another game I give them.
That's true. That's a good
point. Miami should have been gone. I mean, they were winning. They blew that one. So.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. Ralph, we appreciate you stopping by.
My pleasure.
Give the Twitter account. I'm an avid follower, but give me the
we
give
both are.
The actual.
Well, thank you. I appreciate yes. it. It's @RVacchiano, SNY. We also have an Instagram account with the same handle title, yes, whatever you call it.
And by the way, you've been great. You've been a great part of the Jets coverage all year long.
Yes, great job. So
it's good to come over to a winning team every now and then.
Look at that. Look at that. There are many Giant fans in our studio. And see you after that one right there.
Not be a popular guy when I leave here.
Ralph Vacchiano, thank you so
much.
Thank
you, Ralph.
We'll see Ralph soon. All right, so you and I, let's motor on talking about Tampa as Ralph makes his way out. And let's just talk a little bit about this whole – now, you know Ryan Fitzpatrick very well. Boy, go scroll through Willie's Twitter feed or Instagram feed. You will see many a picture at a Yankee game with bearded Fitz.
You brought that back.
Oh, okay. Yes, I did.
Okay.
And Fitz at the golf tournament, the whole thing. Yeah. You know this man very well.
Very good friend of mine. Love him.
Yes. Do you think this game, do you think he really wants to stick it to the Jets?
100%.
Yeah.
I
this
think
carries more to him.
Yeah, and you know, talking to him a little bit, you know, him continue, because he got $12 million playing for the Jets. He could have easily rolled it. He could have said, hey, I'm done. You know, I didn't have the best year, but, you know, I got the money in my pocket. I just want to go. I know him going to Tampa from a personal level. He wanted to kind of have his kids around a little bit more, to be a part of the field, him be a part of, have his kids be a part of the NFL life. I know, you know, knowing him, he's a competitor. And I know for the fact that, you know, some people felt like in that building and outside of that building felt like they were kind of had by him. You know, he gives you that great 1 year.
The holdout.
I was the guy on the soapbox saying, hey, pay Fitzpatrick, me and Brandon Marshall together.
Yeah, right.
He doesn't produce. He ends up getting benched and then, you know, obviously kicked out the door.
And some people thought, fair or unfair, people thought he was a touch on the whiny side.
Correct.
Once he got back.
Correct. And with all that said, I know he's on the back end of his career. If there's one game he wants to have, it's this one.
Yeah.
And with all the bells and whistles attached to it, he would love to debunk the Jets.
Okay, so you bring up a really good point, which is, and the flip side, which I'm not sure fans get, right?
Right.
But we have some knowledge of, you more than me, but I have some of it. There are a lot of people in that organization that are annoyed with Fitz, as he is with them for letting him go, in the sense of how the holdout played out and the whole thing about how he didn't think they were fair to him when they benched him, even though he was having a terrible year.
He's struggling.
So do you think there are people in that Jets building who want to show Fitz, look how much better we are without you?
Oh, 100%. And listen, not only that, but that you have Josh McCown,
Who
was a journeyman just like him.
He's Fitz.
So it's
2.0.
So to have Josh is playing extremely well. When you hear guys in that locker room kind of talk how much they love Josh and how he's our leader.
Yeah, sounds very familiar.
It sounds very familiar. So don't think that Fitz, deep down inside, you know, I know the presser, he's going to be like, no, it's all about the next. No, Fitz wants this one, and he wants to stick it to Josh, he wants to stick it to the Jets, and he wants to walk off like the high horse cowboy.
So if Todd Bowles, who said, we're not just playing right, this is classic Bowles, we're not playing Ryan Fitzpatrick, we're playing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Sure.
You think Todd Bowles believes that, or Todd Bowles wants to, you know, stick it to Fitz a little bit, although he liked Fitz a lot. But do you think there's some of that, hey, I'm going to show you what we can do?
No, I don't think he has I think Todd is really mentally tough. Like,
do you think it was more from the front office?
I think it may be a front office, or maybe, I'm going to keep it front office. But
wait a second. You seem like you're a little undecided.
Well, I think some guys in that locker room probably weren't a fan of Fitz for whatever reason. But there was a lot of guys who
liked him,
loved him. And I was one of those guys. I was team Fitz all the way.
Sure.
However, from Fitz's standpoint, he's riding the bench behind Jameis Winston all something. Jameis goes down. He's the next guy up against his daunted New York Jets. It's a soap opera
waiting
to happen. You can't make it up. Right. It's love right there.
I mean, think about it. When Fitz went to Tampa and the Jets had Tampa on the schedule, in the back of your mind, you had to think there was some way this was going to work out this way.
I didn't.
I just figured that's the way
I thought famous Jameis was going to have a really good year. He's kind of having an up and down year. I thought Fitz was just kind of, you know, being on his journeyman way. But now the football gods is like, uh-uh.
Yeah.
Let's put you two back in the ring and let's have at it.
Right. By the way, again, ask your questions in the comments section. Throw them to us on Twitter and we will answer them coming up. What is your prediction for this game? And obviously, you know, as of now, it looks like Mike Evans will be out pending, you know, his appeal and all that. But what is your prediction for this game?
You know, for me, you talk about Thursday night. They had such great success. They played really well. They got the fan base loving them again. The world starting to pay attention to the Jets. I want to see this team really come out and dominate, not have a letdown, because that's when the Jets fans or the naysayers or the Jonases of the world much go and say, you know what, I told you so, don't believe the hype. Yeah, so I want to believe the hype. I want the world to believe the hype. So I want this team to come out and be physical. I expect them to win, but I don't want them to just win. The greedy really wants them to dominate the Buccaneers and move on. So that's what I expect.
I'm just happy to take the win. but let me tell you this, because I think this team really made a statement against the Bills. And I agree with you. I mean, fast start, right?
Yep.
The whole thing, not playing down to your competition in a particular spot with the backup quarterback and all that sort of stuff. I agree. I think the Jets can make another statement going to the bye week by handling their business this week in a game they should win. I think they'll do it. See, I think they'll do it. Well, I do think they will do it. I'm not – you kill me for all my pessimism in the past. I think they are showing me there's real evidence here that there's growth happening and the team is only getting better. So I will buy in that
what's
it will happen again.
Score?
I am going to go.
I want to see what you get, because your prediction score will let me to see how much I'm gonna buy into what you're saying.
Oh, there's a lot of psychology at work here with this. You know that if I pick two, I will never pick the Jets to blow anybody out, because then I think I'll curse them.
Correct.
I'm gonna go 27-17.
27-17.
Yes. I've scared myself to death. Yes.
I'm gonna go 28-14 Jets.
I was going to go 24-14. I feel so bad picking him because I think I jinx him, which is just the stupidest thing in the world.
You can go back. You have the right.
No, I want to believe.
But all right.
I'm trying
now, if
to
they
believe.
Lose, I'm going to blame you. I'll be honest.
Wait a second.
Because it's worked. It's Thursday night, they blow Buffalo out the water.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
so just stay with it.
No, I got to move on with the times.
Okay.
You're right. My reverse psychology has been very useful.
It's very.
But it's time for me to, you know, it's time for me to move
you're
on.
You're gonna
with
be
the
a
times.
Believer.
Yes.
Okay.
And you know what? After that defensive performance, but I think you bring up a couple of points also. It's not just winning, but it's the way they do. If that defense is pressuring the quarterback again, the way we saw for the first time this year, that tells me it's a step forward, not an aberration.
And
one game pop.
Right. We have to understand Ryan Fitzpatrick knows his defense.
Yes. Todd Bowles said that they have a lot of wrinkles, so it wouldn't be that simple.
Correct. But we also, Fitz plays a lot like Josh as far as getting rid of the ball. He's not going to be a quarterback to sit back there and hold it.
Right.
He's going to dink and dunk.
Right.
That's what Fitz does. And when he has a shot, he's going to take it. So the Jets can't fall asleep at the wheel at all. So it's going to be interesting.
I'm not ignoring you to take a call from my wife here. I'm trying to get on Facebook so I can answer the questions. If I can't answer the questions, hold on. Let me look at this thing here. Hold on. Let me see if I can find this.
It's got to be a lot of questions.
There are a lot of questions. It's never a question if there are a lot of questions. It's a question if I can find them on my phone.
Hopefully they're not the pessimistic.
No. Oh, no. That's the beauty of us doing this
today. The evil Jet fan questions.
All right. We got a lot of questions, and they're all very good. So let me give you this from
PG,
Christopher Forrest. Of course, we're still talking quarterback in the draft, and everyone is on the SoCal kids and the kid from Wyoming. But why no mention of last year's Heisman winner from Louisville, the quarterback?
Lamar Jackson?
Yes. Never had a young quarterback like that, the read option type. By the way, you notice we haven't talked about a certain Texans quarterback this week.
Deshaun Watson.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that is the thing, and I bring it up when we talk about this, because that's still the situation with, quarterbacks who count on their legs so much. I mean, Deshaun Watson is a non-contact injury in practice.
That breaks your heart.
Right, and you saw RG3. Now, RG3 was sort of used wrong by the Redskins and run to the ground at first, but there is still this thought that a quarterback that relies on their legs so much will break down, and so that's why I bring that up to you in regards to this question.
Well, I got to be honest, I'm on the team Bill Polian, and I think he's the first one that made a comment that he's more of a receiver than quarterback. I think, does he have the intangibles? Is he electric fine? Is he dynamic? Sure. But when you talk about today's quarterback has to do, at times, he has to sit in that pocket, and he's going to win that. He's going to have to win a game with his arm. Being a dual threat quarterback is great, but you're going to need an offensive line that could protect you. You're going to have to understand that your ability to run is not going to save you. It's not going to save the team. You have to be a complete quarterback. I don't know if Lamar Jackson's that guy. I just know if you can get the ball in his hand, he can give you some yards. I love him more as a receiver than a quarterback. That's just my personal opinion. The reason why I separate him from Deshaun Watson, because I watched Deshaun Watson a national championship
game. He's a good pocket passer.
Stay in the pocket, right. Make the throw, take some big hits. I seen him go against the Alabama defense who was, you know, who bullies, and he dethroned them. So I believed in Deshaun Watson. I'm really not sold on Lamar Jackson. Yes, is he exciting? Sure. Some people want to compare him to Michael Vick, but right. Michael Vick had an amazing arm, and he had a scheme that could fit him.
All right, let's talk Robert Bianchi. Is Josh McCown team's MVP?
Ooh, that's fair.
I think you're going to buy into that one.
That's fair. I would buy that, yeah. I think it's – I'd say him and DeMario Davis.
Yeah.
Yeah, thus far.
You know what? I know he's young, but I would put Jamal Adams in the conversation as young as he is. Because there's so much about – you wouldn't think on the surface – I'm curious your take on this. You wouldn't think on the surface there's a lot in common between Jamal Adams and Josh McCown. One's a journeyman towards the end of his career. One is an emerging star talent at the beginning. But here's what really strikes them as being very similar between the two. They give their all. They're always competing. It doesn't always work out for them, but they will never stop competing.
Yes.
They're
yes.
very scrappy in how they go about their business. Jamal Adams will get beaten on a couple of plays, but he is going to come and come at you with the same fire. Same thing with McCown.
Yeah.
He will come at you with the same fire no matter what's going on in the game. And one story, and I know you can validate this for me about McCown being a team MVP, Ray Lucas on one of our post-game shows talked about how impressed he was. I think it was when Bilal Powell, one of the games, well, maybe it was Jacksonville, had the long run. It was called back for a terrible call. Was that
correct.
The Jacksonville game? And so, and the whole place, the whole offensive line went nuts.
Wesley Johnson got a holding penalty.
Right,
yes,
right.
I remember that, yep.
And it was a bogus call, and the whole offensive line went nuts. And McCown talked about how he had to settle everybody down and get them organized in the huddle. And Ray Lucas sat there and said to you and I, and you've been in this situation, man, that's incredibly hard to do, to settle all five guys down, get them organized. And then the next play, I believe, was a Robbie Anderson touchdown.
Touchdown, right at him. Yeah. It's hard from that aspect.
That's MVP stuff.
It is MVP, but I think the silver lining in it is that he wasn't trying to control the guys. He was trying to get those guys to understand, like, you can keep that same intensity, you can keep that same anger, but we got to go score, and I need you guys to go block, and we got to go execute. And that's just a guy who's always thinking about the next play, who understands that's part of game management. Your guys are going to react. They're up there scrapping the fight, and they have a reason to react.
Right.
But I got to now get them to focus on the next play and not worry about the refs, because the refs are going to do what they need to do, but we got to do what we need to do and execute, and they was able to score. So it just shows you that they were able to listen, and he was just like, hey, you can be mad, but don't let your anger mess up the next play. And he was able to kind of relay that and get that to the guys. Touchdown.
There's a lot of questions coming in from people about draft stuff.
Yeah.
What positions, I'm going to try and group them all together in a general way here, and we appreciate everybody's questions. Please keep them coming. If we have time, we will answer them. Give me your general sense of what the Jets' biggest need is draft-wise.
Do they
go quarterback? Do they go lineman? What do they do? You and I often disagree on this.
We do disagree. I'm not big on drafting a quarterback in the first round because if they're not a home run type quarterback as far as what you see with Jared Goff. I mean, Jared Goff struggled in his first year. He was able to bounce back. He's having a great sophomore year. But you're talking about some of the rookie wonders that, you know, who really start off in their first year, like Andrew Luck or RG3, Deshaun Watson, you can put him in there. If those guys aren't those guys for your ball club, it sets your franchise back.
It does.
So I don't believe in that. But I think
see Mark Sanchez.
See what happened to Sanchez. Yeah. So I'm more like, hey, you go get yourself a top tier offensive lineman. You know, you go get yourself, you know, another wide receiver. Because for me, Robbie Anderson is coming. He's coming into his own. But they're still not. We still don't have that. Dez Bryant and Valid. Quinton Newell will be back. He's going to be a big factor. But they still need like a breakout number one type receiver. They really need an outside linebacker. And they need somebody who's going to be an instant, like a Khalil Mack type pass rusher or a Von Miller, somebody who's instant sacks, who can rack it up in that department. So for me, it would be receiver, outside linebacker, who I would try to pick in the first round.
Would you go lineman in any way?
I always believe you get your best lineman in the middle rounds, just like how I was drafted.
I was going to say, where were you drafted?
I was fourth round, 131.
There you go.
Yeah.
I wonder why you would say that.
Yeah,
it worked out pretty well, didn't it?
No, but I also believe,
well, there's value there.
There's value there, and most of your blue-collar guys, that's where they hover around. They're not going to wow you on tape, but, you can put the gloves on, they're going to fight for you.
So that's sort of different than that Dallas did it in summer school.
Yes.
And their line certainly worked out pretty well.
Right. I mean, they were lucky, round one, there was quality guys, and they had a system and a scheme that – really allowed those guys to flourish. But, yeah, if you can get yourself – and it's about depth. It's not about replacing the line you have now. It's about 2 or 3 years from now, You're going to have a couple guys that have contracts or a couple guys who, you know, are maybe back in their contracts. You don't want to have to go to the draft then and try to get a guy.
Right, right.
Have these guys grow up in your system so when your starting line is kind of out the door, you got guys to plug and play and keep the chains going.
Right. Here's my thing on the quarterback. I think if you got somebody you like, you go up and get them. I think if Mike Maccagnan really thinks there's something there, you trade the house and go up and get him.
But the problem is we saw that with Hackenberg. You got Hackenberg in the second round.
But they didn't love him like they thought he was going to be a star initially. And he was always viewed, and this may be a question as to why he was taken in the second round as opposed to the third or fourth round, as a bit of a project because of what he went through at Penn State. If Mike Maccagnan loves Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen or Josh Allen, the kid from Wyoming, go up and get him. It's worth spending the money. It's worth spending the draft picks. You got the extra second rounder from Sheldon Richardson. It will take multiple first rounders to move up with the Jets likely picking in the teens. If you at some point you're going to have to address this spot, and if you're not going to do that, then do you make a run at Kirk Cousins?
Yeah.
You make a run. We had a Twitter question. I forgot by who it was, but I thank you for the question. Should the Jets be in on trading for Andrew Luck? What do you think of that? Now, right off the bat, you got to find out how healthy Andrew Luck's going to be.
Sure. I know. Being injured when I was a Jets at times, they have the training staff to get him back on the field. Andrew Luck is the type of guy he's going to work his tail off to get back on the field. He's committed. From drafting a quarterback, I would have to really listen to Maccagnan and say, well, what's the plan? If we're going to go get a quarterback, what are you doing with Bryce? What are you doing with Hackenberg? Because you have to keep McCown back on the team.
McCown's the perfect grooming quarterback.
Your safety net. He's everything you need him to be. You need him to keep him. So what are you going to do with these two guys? And who are you going to let walk? Because once you say, that's who we potentially linking at,
right.
Well, what's the plan with these two guys? Because I think Bryce can play in this league. I really do.
Right.
I'm not sold on Hackenberg, but that's just me.
But I don't think you can pass up someone you love over Bryce Petty. If Bryce Petty was that highly thought of, he'd be playing. Or he would have been playing more earlier in the year, especially in the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about – but you got to give Bryce credit. He got hurt.
Yes.
Came off a soldier injury.
He got crushed
injury
in that game.
And, you know, pretty much was put on the back burner.
Right.
And then he fought his way back into the rotation. So – and guys love Bryce.
Right.
And he's young. He has the big smile. He has the Texas moxie about him. You know, he's not some guy I would really give up on. I think he just needs more time. And, you know, he can win you some games.
Right. I just think – listen, at some point the Jets have to address it. As great as McCown has been, at some point they're going to have to get a young quarterback in here that they believe can play as a legit starter in this league.
Like I said, I was high on Deshaun Watson last year.
You loved him.
Wanted
to take him.
Easily. They didn't. I'm a big fan of Mason Rudolph out of Oklahoma State. I think he's big. He has that big Ben body type. He's a leader. They talk highly about him. So if I had to go get a guy, it would be Mason Rudolph.
Okay. Look at that. Mason Rudolph, huh? Dominic writes to us, big fatties are the key. I'm sure you're going to agree with that one.
It is.
You might disagree with calling them fatties. You like to think of them as true athletes.
Correct.
Ballet, artistic sort of people.
Yeah. Me and my wife had an argument over this. She was like, who's the smartest unit on the team?
Always the offensive line. Right.
She could not believe that.
Right.
And I was like, well, call who you want. They're going to tell you. So we had a little dispute about that. However, I believe they have to do better depth-wise. I think their starting line is great. I think they can shelve. The more he plays, he gets back on the field, he'll be good. But I think from a depth situation, they got to get more quality depth because this is the time of the year, and this is around the league. There's guys who are nicked up, banged up all around the league. When you have quality depth, you got to have a guy who can really get in there and doesn't miss a beat and won't set that line back. This is a chance where the team's up and arrows are going up for this team. All right, let's start getting guys who, if Brian Winters has an ankle, I could plug this guy in. We're not going to miss a beat. Or Carp has something going on. You need to start building your depth and really getting those guys going. So I'm all full about getting a quality guy.
You know what I like for the offensive line? Get a great veteran who can really make his presence felt the way Alan Faneca did when he came to the Jets.
Sure.
Well, you see Andrew Whitworth doing it with the Rams.
But it's tough because those guys are paid now.
They are. But I would. Yeah. They're going to have the money. I'd pay one.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Because I really think it has a good cascading effect all the way down that line. And you've talked about the way Faneca had the effect on Brick and Nick Mangold.
Mangold, yeah. I mean, he was.
And then you had that effect on
him. I had him
too.
In Pittsburgh, and I idolized him. When I got to New York, he wore 66, and then I was like, man, give me 66. That's how much what I loved when I got there, and he was gone. Being around Nick and Brick, what he brought to the table wasn't so much that he was just a great player. It was that he was the type of ball player I noticed from my time being in Pittsburgh. He was at that time, like, he never looked around for answers.
Right.
He was the answer.
Right.
And for me, I always wanted to be that guy. I didn't want anybody to feel like, well, you know, we have to schematically do this or we have to run the ball more on this side. When you looked at 66 for the Pittsburgh Steelers, you were running the ball to his side.
Right, right.
When you needed that 1 yard, 66 was the answer. So that's why that's the guy who I always wanted to be. And I think it was so contagious just by his work ethic and the guy he was. That's what made Nick and Brick those guys. When you needed that 1 yard, you needed that big play, those guys were going to be those guys.
I want to thank everybody who wrote us questions, especially some of the people I grouped together, Rob, Gerardo, Chris, all those guys, John. Those were the people I sort of grouped the questions together.
Great.
A lot of draft questions. Thank you for writing in. Thanks for contacting us on Twitter. Now, every week we wrap up the podcast with a segment in honor of the dearly departed Sheldon Richardson, who gave us that nice second-round pick. With y'all so thirsty off of Sheldon's money quote from the offseason where he said the media was thirsting for him to say something nasty about Brandon Marshall.
Yeah.
The media was. I think we all were. What are you thirsty to see out of the Jets this week?
I'm thirsty to see Austin Seferian Jenkins go back to Tampa.
That's a good point.
And really,
I forgot about that.
Yeah, and really, really laid on to the Buccaneers.
Show how his life has changed.
Yep, and really had like a big day because when he left Tampa, they thought he was done. And when we had him he was our first guy on the podcast. And just how he was so transparent and honest and humbled about the transition and how much he now believes in Todd Bowles and his team and having the opportunity to have a second chance at his career. I want him to go down to Tampa and just flat out ball out and drop the ball like dropping the mic in the end zone after he catches it.
Yeah. No juggle around the end zone near the pylon.
Yeah, we don't need
that. Don't touch the pylon.
Secure it.
Don't let Al Riveron get involved.
Wait for the ref to do this, and then you can drop it.
We don't want anybody in Park Avenue getting involved in any
else. But I want to see him have a big day in Tampa.
That's all right. It makes sense to me. I am thirsty to see more great play out of Darren Lee and Jordan Jenkins. Mm. Take another step forward off of what we saw against the Bills, because you and I had talked about when the linebackers were struggling earlier in the year, how much capital the Jets have actually spent on linebackers in recent years. And when they were struggling, we talked about what a shame it was because they've tried to invest in this unit.
Sure.
And, well, now those investments seem to be paying off in a big way. You know, Darren Lee went first in that draft. Jordan Jenkins went third. You need those guys to not just be okay players. They got to
be good. Yeah.
Productive.
Yep.
And that's what we saw with Jordan Jenkins in the pass rush. And Darren Lee's really emerged as a guy coming – in a lot of situations now, some of the backside moves through the line, using his speed the way, you know, he's got great speed. We all expected to initially. That's what I'm thirsting to see, because if that happens, chances are the Jets will continue to be very competitive down the stretch. Once again, I just want to thank everybody for tuning in on Facebook Live. Willie and I do this every week. You can find it all, the Jet Stream, every week by subscribing to the show in the iPhone podcast app or wherever you listen to your podcast. Just search for the Jet Stream. Find our logo, hit subscribe. Please make sure you rate and review the show. More reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast is. Thumbs up or Willie, and then God help you. My mom.
We'll both show up.
Yeah, trust me, you'll be scared to death. thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.
All right now. Get up.